issues. Broadcast live, nationwide on both public radio and public access cable television. Join Pacifica Radio's national affairs correspondent Larry Bensky, along with WBAI's Shelton Walden and Jenny Bourne, as they examine the issues of air quality, lead poisoning, solid waste, and environmental racism. Be part of our live audience as we grill representatives from the New York City Department of Environmental Protection, the EPA, and the General Motors Corporation. Get answers to the questions that affect all of us. The meeting will be held at the Borough of Manhattan Community College's Triplex Theater, 199 Chambers Street. Doors open at 8 p.m. Admission is free. So don't forget that Slow Death in the Cities, a Pacifica Radio Town Hall meeting, Thursday, October 31st, from 9 to 11 p.m., live on WBAI and Deep Dish TV. For more information, call Deep Dish TV at 212-473-8933 or call WBAI weekdays from 9 to 5 at 212-279-0707.
And this is WBAI in New York. The time is 9 o'clock, and that means it's time for Off the Hook. And a very good evening to one and all. The program is Off the Hook. This is Emmanuel Goldstein with you on this Wednesday night. We talk about technology. We talk about the phone company. We talk about invasion of privacy. And we talk about hackers. All kinds of things like that are in the cards for tonight. And, of course, we also talk to you, our listeners, at 279-3400. We'll be getting to that in just a little while. But first, some bits of information, some news, some happenings of the day that just can't go unmentioned. Stay with us. We're also going to have a rather thrilling demonstration of something that I just discovered, and I think it's amazing. But we'll get to that in just a little bit. First, some news, some reassuring news. Fears are growing that computer software designed to protect the Sizewell B nuclear reactor from serious accidents. Fears are that that software is too complex to check. Sizewell B will be the first nuclear power station in the United Kingdom to rely so heavily on computers in its primary protection system. A computer-controlled safety system was seen as superior to one operated by people because of the risk of human error and people like Homer Simpson. A number of software engineers close to the project are known to have suggested that the software is now so unmanageable that it should be scrapped and the whole system built again. The main worry is that the software being produced by Westinghouse, which is an American company, is so large and complex that it is impossible to verify that it would react as it should if the reactor behaved dangerously. Now, a simpler system would be easier to verify and to maintain, but it would be difficult, well, not impossible, to find a politically acceptable route whereby the existing system could be scrapped and development started again from scratch. From the London Independent of Sunday, October 13th, a complex problem of tests. Software engineers agree that it is not safe to assume that software will always operate correctly, especially in systems such as nuclear power stations, where people's lives are at risk if the software fails. But computer programs are notoriously difficult to verify. The chief anxiety over the protection system for Sizewell B is that it is very large and complex. This bucks the trend in safety-critical software, which is to build small, simple systems. It's usually impossible to test software for all combinations of the inputs it may receive, say from the reactor in a nuclear power station, or say from AT&T on January 15th, for instance. It would take thousands of years to test the most simple system. Now, an alternative approach is to rely on statistical analysis of the system to give probabilities of its reliability, and this would involve running the system for long enough to get an idea of the chances of it failing, but even this could take many years for a large system. So basically it's not something very pleasant here. Nuclear Electric, which is the company over there, has designed its system so that it should fail no more than once in every 10,000 demands. And a demand is defined as being when the reactor is in a state where the software should shut it down. So if that happens 10,000 times, it's a good chance that one of those times it won't really work out all that well. Or it could happen sooner. Computers are such wonderful things. How about this? A computerized thermostat. Sound like a good idea for your homes and offices, rather than having to deal with that bulky, inconvenient circle thing that you turn with your hands? Everybody hates that. Let's hear from Lidjevix Bukis of Rochester, who says, I have a typical electronic setback thermostat installed. A couple of nights ago, it failed in the on position, causing my furnace to run and run until my three-year-old woke up and came over to tell me that she was hot. The temperature had reached 92 degrees. The thermostat itself had decided that it was still 68 degrees. Rebooting the thermostat by removing and reinserting the batteries made it get back in touch with reality. I replaced the batteries too, but considering it had enough power to run the LCDs, that's probably not it. There are electronic setback thermostats that mount over existing mechanical mercury switch thermostats. I always thought it was silly to have a little motor move the arm up and down to cycle the furnace, but now I have to wonder about what temperature my electronically controlled furnace would be driven my house to before either reaching thermal equilibrium or igniting or melting something, especially if left to itself over a vacation. At least with a mercury switch in there, the most extreme setting is probably still below where my good old all-electronic device would have taken my home. And of course, the other main danger that we face when we run blindly into the computer age is not keeping backups. And I'm sure we're all guilty of that to a degree. But probably not as guilty as this poor school in London. That's right. Earlier this month, the London Evening Standard carried a very small paragraph reporting a fire at Hitchin College of Further Education. And according to the writer of this piece, Peter Meller, it drew his attention since it's a few miles away from my home and my ex-wife works there as a secretary. The fire started at 2 a.m. and was not discovered for an hour. By then, the building complex housing the total computing facilities of the college, both educational and administrative, had been gutted. The backup tapes, needless to say, were stored on site, close to the computers, in a non-fireproof cupboard. Need I say more? Total damage to computer equipment was quoted in the paper as 10 million pounds. But the total amount of loss is incalculable, given that the college's financial and student records have all been wiped out. And it's on the cards that Hitchin College will cease to exist as a separate institution. Sober warning there, folks. Keep backups. Practice safe computing. How about this? Some good news from credit people. Or is it good news? You tell me. According to all kinds of media sources, actually, TRW is now going to be giving out free credit reports. Isn't that a joy? All those bits of information about you now will be accessible by you without having to pay a huge amount of money. It's life in America, huh? It's not as good as it seems, however, because they're not giving you the same information that they give to, say, banks or other department stores that want to see what kind of a risk you are. And they're only going to do this for you once a year. They won't tell you when other people have accessed your credit reading, your credit files. It's a step, but it's a piddling step. According to the Wall Street Journal on Monday, October 15th, TRW has decided to purge local tax delinquency info from the files of consumers residing in four New England states. A while back, there was a bunch of tax information errors in Norwich, Connecticut. And it seems that similar errors have been made in the files of consumers living in several other communities. TRW blames the problem on a lax subcontractor. Many other people blame the problem more broadly on TRW's apparent unwillingness to verify input or accept corrections. Consumers say it's difficult to reach anyone at TRW who even appears capable of influencing the data in a file. And further report that TRW's personnel refuse to rectify errors even when the TRW folks' attention is drawn to them. A little comedy from Blockbuster Video now. As some of you may know, the Blockbuster chain of video stores uses a very spiffy computer system to, among other things, keep track of what videos you've watched, what they have in stock, and who has checked in and out what videos. And all videos have a barcode, which they simply scan into their computer system. Now, when you bring the video in, you put it in the return box, and eventually someone scans it into the computer as a return video. According to this submission to the Risks Digest on the internet, this contributor, Mowgli Asor, checked out a video Friday, he's going to call that video A, and returned it on Monday when he picked up another one, video B. He says, "Today, Tuesday, I got a call that I had not yet returned video A and should do so soon. On Monday, it was already one day late. I went in and returned video B and then mentioned that their computer was a little behind and had missed my return. The lady there remarked that that was odd and went to find her manager. The manager did all sorts of neat computer things and wasn't able to find that someone else had checked out the video. And, of course, didn't find a record of me checking it in. She then mentioned that she didn't know how this could happen. I pointed out to her that I had at least twice seen employees get distracted when they put the video on the counter, but before they check it in, and have seen another overzealous employee come along and clean the counter off, moving the tapes to the to-be-shelved section. She then sent the first lady to check the shelves for it. Well, the video couldn't be found, and I then asked the manager if she could check if the video had been checked out by someone else. She replied that it had not, so if I didn't have it, it must still be in the store. I was getting a little bit annoyed at this point. And then the manager said, I was training a new girl on Monday, and this morning we found about 25 videos hadn't been checked in properly. Note that previously she didn't know how this could happen. So, the upshot of this is, I have to hope that they find the video around the store somewhere. She also mentioned that misshelving videos was common among new employees. Because if they don't find the video, I will have to buy it, and of course I'm not allowed to rent any more videos until the entire matter is resolved. At this time, Blockbuster thinks I stole the tape, and since I gave them the proof I didn't on Monday and they lost it, I of course have no proof anymore. It's the risk of relying on employees to know their jobs. Now in our Big Brother section of the program, another piece from England. It comes from David Barshard. England's banks plan to spend more than £500 million in the next 3 years on an initiative to combat plastic card fraud, but they have persuaded Mr. Kenneth Baker, the Home Secretary, to drop controversial proposals to put photographs of holders on all credit and debit cards. Under the new fraud prevention measure, shoppers may soon have to punch in their personal identity number into a computer terminal each time they pay by card. Other possibilities being discussed by the banks and the Home Office include checking a customer's identity by shining a laser beam on his or her retina and verifying the signature on the card by computer. These proposals were discussed at a meeting in London between Mr. Baker and banking industry representatives on how to combat the rapid increase in plastic card fraud. Banks fought against the introduction of photographs on cards because they feared the government was asking them to introduce an identity card scheme through the back door. Of course, having retina scans is a more sophisticated identity card system. There's all kinds of ways we give away our privacy, you know? And the worst ways are when we do it voluntarily. Sanford Sherazin writes, even though TRW may have changed some of its tactics, the credit industry continues to grab bits and pieces of private information in any way possible. Privacy battle is far from over, particularly since TRW is going to provide credit histories while not having to reveal all of the personal information it has gathered and continues to sell. What follows is a perfect example of what information is being sought and the often manipulative ways by which it is being gathered. This is from a letter that Buyer's Market sent to me. If you enjoy shopping by mail, we are ready to give you $150 in savings just for telling us what's on your personal shopping list. This invitation is mailed to consumers with unique interests, people just like you, who are sought after by the nation's leading mail order companies. As part of this sought after group, you qualify for a 6-month free charter membership in Buyer's Market, the new nationwide organization that not only arranges generous discounts for preferred mail order customers, but also brings you Mail Selector. That helps you get catalogs and special offers on products you want, while helping to reduce unwanted mail. There's only one requirement. To receive a minimum of $150 in savings certificates and free charter membership in Buyer's Market, you must complete and return our consumer survey by October 30th, 1991. Well, that's today, folks, so I think we're out of luck. At the bottom of the questionnaire is a box marked confidential. And in small print, it's revealed that the organization is part of Equifax, which some of you may realize is a biggie in the credit history industry. And the confidential statement is as follows. Buyer's Market is a nationwide organization of consumers sponsored by Equifax Consumer Direct. Consumer information provided to Buyer's Market is used solely to facilitate consumer purchasing choices. It is not supplied for any consumer evaluative activities and will not be added to any other Equifax database. The information you provide to Buyer's Market by completing this member profile will be kept completely confidential. Your answers will be used by the staff of Buyer's Market solely to guide cooperating merchants in directing to you offers you may be interested in, and or to help eliminate your name from mailings or offers you indicate you don't want. Doesn't this confidential statement make you feel protected? I wonder how many people are going to fill out the consumer survey, which contains sections on personal interests, use of coupons, leisure and hobbies, new product preferences and purchasing plans, and about you, including questions on age, income, home ownership, length of residence, size of household, marital status, children by age, and personal computer. Maybe Mr. Justice Thomas or the Honorable Senator Orrin Hatch, new converts to the cause of privacy, will become advocates for limiting this invasion. I wonder if their records on video rentals are available through Equifax. That comes from Sanford Sherazan of Natick, Massachusetts. You're listening to Off the Hook. I'm Emmanuel Goldstein. We're here until 10 o'clock. And coming up in just a moment, a rather shocking demonstration of something that I'll bet not many people know about yet. Oh, but you will. You will. We'll be taking phone calls at 212-279-3400 in probably about 5 minutes or so. So get yourself ready for that. Here's a humorous bit from Holland, from Ralph Moonen. I'm a frequent user of ATMs. As banks in the Netherlands are closed after 5 p.m. and on the weekends, the only way you're going to get cash after that time is through an ATM. Unfortunately, not all of them are the same, and some display a most peculiar behavior. ATM says, insert card. I insert my card. ATM says, key in your PIN code. I key in my PIN code. ATM says, there are no receipts available currently. Choose the amount of cash you wish to withdraw. I choose 100 guilders. ATM says, there are no receipts available currently. Do you want a receipt? I press the no key. ATM says, we're sorry, there are no receipts available currently. Please wait. ATM says, retrieve cash from ATM, please. There are no receipts available currently. I say, I know there are no receipts. Please quit whining and give me my money. ATM says, please take your card out. I take my card out. ATM says, please wait for your receipt. There are no receipts available currently. And something else that this particular contributor noticed is that the banks apparently edit the on-screen messages on the fly He says, once I was making a withdrawal and the screen was flashing a bank advertisement on the bottom two lines, something like, open a new account now and receive this great CD with the greatest hits of 1991 plus a whopping 5.4% interest. When suddenly, the cursor moved to that line and lo and behold, they edited the interest rate. The ATM continued my transaction perfectly, but it was pretty weird to see the line edited on screen. And finally, I once arrived at an ATM that looked in pretty bad shape. Someone had apparently drank too much and decided to unload his lunch over the keyboard. I took one look and decided to not make the planned transaction. At that point, a van stopped and some service guy got out. So I waited to see what would happen. And the guy goes through a door next to the ATM, does something to the inside, comes out, and lifts the entire front off. Puts it into his van and replaces it with a new one. I asked why, and he said, well, would you like to have to poke in someone else's puke? I said, but you don't need to replace the whole front for that. You could just clean it. And the answer was a vague story about disinfecting the thing and AIDS, and that he didn't fancy having to clean it. All of those previous submissions came to us through the Risks Digest, which is an electronic publication that is spread throughout the internet, and we read bits of it here on Off the Hook to bring all of those that aren't on the internet into the world of technological risks. Now, on to our demonstration. Pay attention, especially those of you who have selected MCI as your long-distance carrier. For there is an incredible risk here. You may recall, over the past couple of months, there's been this this deal that MCI has been pushing left and right, where if you get your friends to sign up for MCI, and then you have MCI, and you call your friends, or your friends call you, everybody saves money. If the destination number is an MCI number, and your number is an MCI number, you can save something like 20% off the regular rate. Now, when this first happened, I was a bit leery of that because, you know, it's one thing to select a long-distance company for yourself, but when you go around acting as an agent for the company and getting other people to select it so that you can save money, it seems like you're kind of doing their work for them. But that was a minor point compared to what somebody pointed out to me very recently. Now, those people that have gone for this and have joined the calling circle are told that all they have to do to check on the status of their calling circle is to dial an 800 number from any touch-tone phone. And a recording will tell you who has been added, who is not eligible, and who is in the process of being contacted. Now, this is what I want to demonstrate here. What we're going to do is connect to this particular 800 number using our trusty friend the dial tone here. And listen and learn.
Welcome to MCI Friends and Family Circle Update Line. Please enter your telephone number beginning with your area code.
Now, I happen to know somebody that has this particular service, that has MCI as their long-distance carrier. So I'm going to enter their phone number now.
Thank you. One moment, please, while we access your account.
No problem.
To verify your MCI account, please enter your 5-digit zip code.
Well, there's no way I could get into this, is there? I have to know the person's zip code. Well, let me take a wild random guess, since I happen to know the person and I know the phone number. Getting the zip code should not really be that hard, should it?
Congratulations, and thank you for being one of our valued friends and family customers. Your calling circle consists of 4 members and 2 nominees. If you would like to inquire about a specific member or nominee to your calling circle, press 1. To hear the status of each person in your calling circle, press 2.
Let's hear status on everybody.
We will first list your friends and family circle nominees who are not currently active members of your calling circle. If at any time you wish to interrupt this list, press 9. To speak with an MCI customer service representative, press 0. Your wife at 212-3241 was an active member of your calling circle but recently changed from MCI. Have they moved? If so, please press 0 for an MCI representative to update their status.
By the way, we're censoring the some of the phone numbers, so you won't hear the entire
business
phone
associate
number.
Associate at 212-3240 was an active member of your calling circle, but recently changed from MCI. Have they moved? If so, please press 0 for an MCI representative to update their status. That concludes the list of your circle nominees. To hear a description of your active members, press 1. For other options, press 2.
Let's hear the active members.
The following people are active members of your calling circle. You will receive a 20% discount every time you make a long-distance call to them. The person at 914-3901. The person at 516-5606. Your wife at 718-9638. The person at 718-589. Your home number is active on your circle so that you will save 20% when traveling and using your MCI card to call home or another active member of your circle. And for the active members in your circle that are in your local calling area, you will save 20% when you call them long distance with your MCI card. To inquire about a specific circle member, press 1. To speak to an MCI customer service representative, press 0.
Well, I think we've pressed enough buttons to demonstrate this. The incredible blatant invasion of privacy here. I can call up, literally pick a number at random, and find out phone numbers that people call. Of course, I have to prove that I'm really who I say I am by entering my zip code. Talk about infallible security. How this one got by in this day and age, I don't have the slightest idea, but I'd like to know what people out there think of that. Any of you have MCI? Any of you subscribe to this service? You know, I could just go out there now and pick a number, you know? And actually, you know, I know somebody else, and I haven't yet checked this one, but I'm going to check it now. I'm going to see if, because I know their zip code, and I think they have MCI. Let me give that a try. Again, our phone number is 212-279-3400, and we don't use MCI.
Welcome to MCI Friends and Family Circle Update Line. Please enter your telephone number beginning with your area code.
Phone number has been entered.
Please, while we access your account.
No problem.
To verify your MCI account, please enter your 5-digit zip code.
Okay, I'll give a wild guess.
Congratulations.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for being one of our valued friends and family customers. Your calling circle consists of 2 members and 1 nominee. If you would like to inquire about a specific member or nominee to your calling circle, press 1. To hear the status of each person in your calling circle, press 2. We will first list your friends and family circle nominees who are not currently active members of your calling circle. If at any time you wish to interrupt this list, press 9. To speak with an MCI customer service representative, press 0. We will be inviting your brother-in-law at 908-91 to join MCI and your calling circle. As soon as we speak with him, we will update the status on your calling circle. That concludes the list of your circle nominees. To hear a description of your active members, press 1. For other options, press 2.
Okay, we'll check out the active members.
The following people are active members of your calling circle. You will receive a 20% discount every time you make a long-distance call to them. The person at 516-3. Your brother at 914-7. Your home number is active on your circle.
Okay, we've heard all that before. So that's basically how it works. I've only had a couple hours to play with this system. And already the information that I've gotten out of it is information that really should not be able to get. Does anybody think I should be able to call up an 800 number and just find out what other people have selected as numbers they're going to call? It's pretty frightening, it's pretty disturbing, and it gets me kind of sick. Yes, it does, because how anybody could think that that is adequate security for that kind of information is well beyond me. And those of you who have MCI should take a good long look at how they protect your information. Not only do I know the phone numbers, I know what they are. I know about brothers-in-law and brothers and wives and business associates. Things I don't need to know. Things I should not know. Okay, we have an open switchboard. 279-3400, area code 212. We'd like to hear what you have to say about this. And we'd like to hear what you have to say about other technological issues that we have brought up tonight and various other places as well. By the way, an addendum to that previous demonstration here from Brian Krause, this is also on the Risk Digest. I called MCI about this. Yeah, word is getting out about this this thing. And the first representative I spoke with tried to convince me that nobody would try to get my numbers that way, and that really, if someone was malicious, they could call him and cancel or change my service anyway. That made me feel good. I then spoke to the supervisor. She had never used the friend's number, which, by the way, is 1-800-FRIENDS, F-R-I-E-N-D-S. And she had never used that number since she worked at MCI and didn't need to use that number. She seemed surprised that you only needed a zip code and has promised to get back to me. In the meantime, I'm not adding any more people to my list, and I'm considering switching to a company that doesn't make my monthly bill public information. Enough said. 279-3400. Good evening. You there?
Oh, yeah, hello.
Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. Are you aware that in order to, like if you're at a payphone and you're calling a number and to check it, you got to insert a dollar?
That's true. That's called verification. It used to be free, you know. It used to not cost anything. But you have to, I don't know how much it is exactly, and it's different if it's long distance, but...
It happened to me. I'm from Manhattan. I'm trying to call a friend in Brooklyn. His phone was busy all day. They said I had to insert a dollar. If there was a problem with the phone, I'd get it back. So I said, well, make it an emergency call, and they wanted $1.50.
Interesting.
Well, interesting.
I know if you do a break-in, an emergency break-in, they will charge you more for that. Unless, and this is a little known fact, unless it's really an emergency, like a real emergency, and then they can get the police to do it somehow.
Uh-huh.
But I understand that if you don't have any money and you have no way of doing this and it's really, really a life or death emergency, you can do it. But you really shouldn't unless it's, you know, that kind of emergency.
Okay, that's it.
Okay, thanks for calling. But don't do that, folks, unless it's really an emergency. Otherwise, they'll start charging for 911. Good evening.
Hi. I've had some experiences with MCI that I really don't like at all. I do have AT&T, and I personally I don't think one is any better than any other. But I had some members of my family. It started with my sister, who thought it was such a great thing to switch to MCI. And the thing that really got me was that all of a sudden I started getting harassed by family, you know, to switch. And I thought, oh, God, what is this, you know, coming to, you know, now that...
You see, they're doing MCI's job for them, aren't they?
Yeah, I really... And I've told a lot of people about it. I've told people to steer clear of it.
I can imagine...
I just don't like that.
One of those commercials that you see on TV where the person is relaying this sob story about how they keep getting harassed by other long-distance companies. Well, then I picked up the phone, and it was my cousin Ernie saying, hey, have you tried MCI yet? You know, it's getting to the point where this whole thing is
really
madness.
Insulting to me one day and said, well, are you going to make... You know, because my mother and father usually call me rather than, you know, they say, well, we don't mind, you know, we'll call you, you know, it's long distance, but, you know, and they said, and she said, well, are you going to make them pay? I mean, she was trying, like, laying this guilt trip on me about, you know, making them pay a higher rate because I wouldn't switch. And,
unbelievable.
And I said, well, that just clinched it. I said, well, I'm never going to switch now.
You're not one to bow into that kind of peer pressure,
right? God, no way.
That's,
absolutely.
That's good. Right. Listen, do you know their... I assume you know their phone number, right?
No.
You don't know? No, the phone number of your relatives. You know those numbers, right?
Oh, of course.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know their zip codes, too, right?
Yes.
Well, you can just call that 800-FRIENDS number and find out all the numbers they call. Isn't that amazing?
I think it's horrible.
Well... Give it a try, and then call them. This is what you do, sir. You record it onto a tape recorder. Then you call all your relatives, and you play back the tape recorder and say, anybody can get this because you're a part of this program.
Now,
what do you think of that?
What happens when... I just kind of caught the middle of when you were in that. When you call friends...
You call 1-800-FRIENDS, you enter the phone number of somebody who has MCI, and you enter their zip code, and it will give you a list of everybody and their phone number that is part of that particular deal.
Oh, my God. That's horrible.
It's incredibly stupid as well.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I even called AT&T. I mean, not that, you know, like I said at the beginning, I'm not enamored of AT&T, but I do have, you know, I'm satisfied with my monthly bills, and I know how to use Reach Out America so that I can have a reasonable long-distance rate each month. But the thing is, I mean, they don't do that kind of stuff so far. I mean, that's all I can say.
Well, I'll
just leave it at that.
I think they probably know a bit more about it.
I did call them one day to complain about it. They said, yeah, we know about it, but, you know, there's very little we can do.
Uh-huh.
You know? God, it just makes me sick.
Well, spread the word, make more people sick. That's what we're here for.
Definitely.
All right, thanks for calling.
Okay.
279-3400, good evening.
Yeah, I have a couple of questions about caller ID.
Okay.
I received it about 2 months ago.
You're in New Jersey?
Yeah. I'm down by Toms River area.
Okay.
And well, my sister-in-law, she calls me up from upstate New York. The phone number that shows up on the dial is a 201 phone number. It's always the same number every single time.
Really? It shows up as a 201 number. And what happens when you call that number?
Oh, I don't know. I didn't try it.
You didn't try it?
No.
Man, you got to be more curious than that. It could be your. It could be she's playing some kind of game, you know?
No, no.
Could be she doesn't live in New York at all.
No, it's all the way up in Lake Sacandaga, I think. It's up there.
Well, somehow she's coming in on that line. Maybe she's using some kind of weird long-distance company that makes, outdials and trunk lines or something.
I know she's in, one of those little rural areas where the population's 1,000 or 800 people. It's really small.
Yeah, one of those remote villages. I've heard of them.
Right. My next question is, if someone calls me up from, let's say, northern New Jersey, and it'll show up out of area on my caller ID, and yet the telephone book that I have, it says on a certain page, to record it, I would just have to hit a star and then 67 or something, and the telephone company automatically records the number.
Even if it's out of area?
Well, that's what I'm curious. I don't know.
I would doubt that, because if it's out of area, that means they don't have the capability of recording it. But, try it. Next time you get one, try recording it and see what happens. But
see, they won't give me the number, though, except unless if you use it for, a lawsuit or something like that.
Oh, this is for to report a harassing call or something like that.
Right, exactly. That's the basic reason why I got it.
Well, you could always hit those buttons by mistake. See if you get the, little verification tone. Is that what you're supposed to get, some sort of verification tone?
Right.
Okay, maybe if it doesn't do it, it won't give you the verification tone.
Hmm.
What I suggest you do, and this is off the record, and everybody listening, remember this is off the record. If you get one of those calls and you want to try it out, just accidentally hit star 67 or whatever you have to hit.
Mm-hmm.
And just see what happens. See if you get a call from somebody saying, hey, do you wish to press charges against this person or whatever?
Yeah. Okay.
There's one other thing I'd like you to try, though, since you have caller ID. Now, when you get one of those private calls, right, you get a P for private.
Mm-hmm.
It means the person doesn't want their number to be revealed. Try...
A block, you mean?
Putting that in. Do you have the capability of putting storing numbers into a list where you won't have to answer them at all? You can just ignore them.
Right. Yeah. It just permanently stays in memory. I can memorize.
Okay. Try to do that to a private number and see if it works.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And in fact, you might even want to try this yourself. Try from a different number, and make it private yourself, and then put that into the whatever they call that bin where you forget about numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Then call your business office and say, hey, I forgot which numbers I put in that bin. Can you tell me what they are?
Uh-huh.
And see if you can get a private number that way. If you can, and I suspect you can, that means that this call blocking is really a word that I can't say on the air.
Yeah, right, of course.
Yeah, well, I can say that on the air, I guess. But give that a try and get back to us.
Okay.
Thanks for calling. 279-3400, the program is off the hook. Good evening.
Hi. On last week's show, you dialed an 800 number, which then accessed a menu of different fantasy lines that could be connected to. Do you remember that?
Right, and it would call you back collect.
Right, it would call you back collect, and they gave a price of like $1 a minute.
Right.
Those lines are accessible, at least within the New York area, for 30 cents the first minute and 11 cents each additional minute. Is the difference then going simply to that company that provides that service, which is more than twice the amount that it costs to call them?
I'm not quite sure, because I still have yet to find a phone that will accept a collect call, so I can see if it's going through a phone company or if they're just simply calling you directly and calling it a collect call. I don't know. But that's a good question. You sure it's the exact same service? Because a lot of them are very similar.
From the names of it and everything, yes, it is the exact same service. They call themselves the same things.
Uh-huh. What's particularly scary, though, with the one we called last week is that they knew your phone number and you didn't have to tell them your phone number.
Right.
That was what got me. Not the price so much, but what they learned from you dialing their number. All right, thanks for calling.
Together, thank you.
Good evening, you're on the air.
Oh, thank you very much for a very informative show. Your illustration there of how deregulation has really, you flip that right over on its head, you see. It's not deregulized. You can take anything and invert it, and it's amazing just how our privacy has been, infringed upon, or can be, with these gimmicks. You know, the phone has turned into this incredible gimmick because everyone in this country is so hard up to for money or to sell things, whatever. My question to you is, terms such as calling circles, can you recommend any books or anything or or places to go where I can find out more of these phone terms?
Phone terminology, huh?
Like Reach Out America, caller ID.
You know, I don't know of a book that will tell you such current things, because they're evolving and changing so fast. If you just keep your ear out to these to these technological terms as they,
are there any journals
next month? You could subscribe to 2600, of course. You know, the Hacker Quarterly. Come to a hacker meeting this Friday at City Core Center.
Where?
That's a good thing you reminded me. It's at City Core Center this Friday from 5 to 8 p.m. Right in the lobby area, and you just hang out there and talk to a bunch of computer hackers and phone freaks, and they know all the lingo, all the jargon, and these are the guys that know how to work the machines,
right?
And they also know what the risks are.
The whole sales you've illustrated about this whole mentation of how we sell things, and the phone is now the biggest, aside from junk mail and the fax machine, which is a phone, right. Development of the phone, just how the phone is, it's amazing.
It's amazing. It's also very scary, and all forms of technology can be very scary if they're misused. And I think we're looking at misuse either through through malevolence or through simply ignorance. And we gotta be on the lookout for both of those.
Well, because we want to be manipulated.
I think some of us do.
A lot of us do.
I do think that.
Thank you, Manuel.
Thank you. Good evening.
Hello.
Yes. Go ahead.
With the zip code being your security, I know I can do the same thing on my credit cards. That's all security you need is call up your credit card and punch in your zip code.
Well, yeah, but you have to know your credit card number to start with, which I know is easy to get, but still, it's not as easy to get as a phone number.
It's your wallet. And you're going to have a zip code in there on a driver's license or something.
That's true. So anybody who steals your wallet can find out all kinds of things about your credit rating.
But as far as the security on the telephone lines, I think that's really a matter of future shock, because, I think we're all forgetting about the good old days when you could call up an operator and say you'd like your phone call, say you're at a pay phone out of state, and you don't have $5 in change, and you say, I'd like this phone call billed to my home number of, and just give them any number.
Right.
And they would take it.
Well, almost always from a pay phone, they would call to verify. But I don't think they even do that anymore.
That's the thing. They don't do it anymore because of the abuse.
Right. But, it seems as if they haven't learned a thing if they're going to do it this way. What I called before, all those numbers that I got as a result, I can now call those numbers and enter them because I know they're part of this MCI plan, and I could just find out all the phone numbers that all these people call, and it's a lot of them are going to be unlisted phone numbers. It's a really scary thing.
Well, if you just get a hold of the guy's MCI card, too, the same thing could happen.
Not really. You need to know the phone number. You need to find the phone number. Just by getting somebody's MCI card, I can't see what numbers. I don't get the phone bill, you see.
Well, I would think what the important thing you're looking for is seeing if you can go and cheat on his phone bill. As far as who he's calling, even with the numbers that you called up, okay, fine, you have numbers, but you still don't have any names or addresses on these people.
That's not too hard to get. That really isn't, not in this day and age. But yeah, making free phone calls, that's easy enough. It's extremely easy to do that. But this is something that goes beyond that. This is actually probing into your life and seeing what numbers you call and having a computer spit them out to you and tell you how you related to these people as well. Something that I'm not too comfortable with. Thanks for calling. Let's go on to another phone call here. Good evening.
Yeah, there's a New York telephone 800 number, which does the same thing. You enter a number, which is anything, in New York, because it's New York telephone, and the zip code, and it'll give you, instead of information, it'll give you the billing information for that person for that month, how much they've paid, how much is due, and it does a host of other things.
Okay, wait a minute. You're going to tell me this number, are you not?
Should I say it on the air?
Say it
on.
Everybody has a right to know this.
Sure, okay. It's in the front of the phone book also, but it's 1-800 698-1311.
And it's a touch-tone service?
Well, there seems to be a problem with that. It works during the day, but they don't want to connect you during the evening because occasionally they want to put an operator on to. But but I haven't encountered one yet, but I have encountered some trouble with calling in the evening.
So what you're saying is when you do call and you get a machine, it asks you for your phone number, it asks you for your zip code?
And then you dial what specific information you want. You can arrange how you want to be billed. And as I said, it tells you for that month how much you owe, etc.
Well, I certainly will check into that. Thanks. Okay. Thanks for bringing it to my attention. Anybody else has something like that, please do bring it to my attention.
Yeah.
Thanks for calling.
Bye.
And there's several ways you can bring it to my attention. You can mail something here to WBAI. The program is Off the Hook. This is Emmanuel Goldstein. Our address is 505 8th Avenue, New York, New York, 10018. And if you want to leave a message on an answering machine, you can call up the 2600 office at 516-751-2600. Let's try and take a couple more phone calls in the time we have left. Good evening.
Yes, there was somebody earlier who wanted to, who complained about busy signal verification.
Yeah.
Now, there's a way you can verify the busy signal for free.
Okay, how's that?
Okay, what you do, you have to know the phone number, which you will know, of course, and you have to know the address of that phone number.
Okay.
You call up 611.
Call up, hey, that's not, and 611 tests it as you're on the line.
And they, and you tell them, you want, they don't even care if it's your phone number or not. All they ask for is the address.
Uh-huh.
They'll tell you if there's any problem with the, if there's apparently any problem with the line.
Well, they'll tell you if the line is checking okay. Will they tell you if there is a voice on the line?
They won't tell you if there's a voice on the line, but they'll tell you if the line is in use or apparently in use.
I see. That's a very good suggestion, sir. Very good. I my hat's off to you on that one.
Yeah. And one other thing, which is somewhat different from what you've been talking about, but I got a piece of junk mail from my Discover card, and now you can use the Discover card sort of similar to the AT&T Universal card, except you put in your Discover card phone number. This will get you Sprint.
So you're saying you can use your Discover card as a Sprint calling card?
Yeah. And the first invoice you get from Sprint, which presumably is payable in full, like the AT&T, they give you a credit of 10 minutes of Sprint service, a 3,000-mile call at the night weekend rate. And I called up Discover Card, and they revealed that the amount of credit is $2.05, which apparently is 10 minutes worth of phone calls plus the 75 cent surcharge for interstate calls.
Interesting.
And so they have a number. They have a thing that they don't call it a PIN, because you already have a PIN to get for your Discover card to get money out of cash machines, ATMs. But they have another four-digit number which they call something else, and that's what you stick at the end of your.
Well, what do they call it?
Card. I forget what they call it.
But it's does these four numbers have any meaning?
No, it's the same thing as a PIN, except it's for making phone calls instead of taking money out of an ATM.
So they give you two PINs.
It essentially wind up with two PINs, yeah.
Well, that's nice and confusing.
Hold them up to verify that.
Okay.
It's brilliant of them, right?
Uh-huh. Sounds great to me. Thanks for calling. Let's take one more phone call. Good evening.
Yeah, hi.
How you doing?
I want to ask you a question. I have an 800 number that I use at home because I work at home. For business purposes. For about 3 months, I've been getting about four different calls for other companies, right?
Uh-huh.
And no matter what I do or how I check it out, everybody that I ask to repeat, like the number, they all say my number. And I try calling the number and getting information, tried everywhere to find out. And none of these companies are listed as having 800 numbers.
It's for different companies?
Right. So my bill is like an extra $100, $150 a month because I get so many calls, from people looking for these companies.
Well, now...
Four different ones.
What company does your 800 number go through?
AT&T.
It is AT&T. They really should tell you if someone else had the number before you, and obviously if that person or company got a lot of phone calls at that number, then you're still going to get a residual amount. I would suggest changing the number. Is that going to be a real pain for you to do?
Well, yeah, I'd send out a catalog. But the problem is this, that when I call up information, nasty information, like, let's say, the company John Deere is one of the companies, right? Let's say John Deere.
Right.
I want to call John Deere 800 number. They don't have any listing for an 800 number.
Well, probably because either they went out of business or they took that 800 number down, which is why you got it, you see. They're always changing 800 numbers.
And I have no rights in the thing at all.
Yeah, you do. I mean, you can complain a lot to AT&T, and if that doesn't work, call the FCC because they are in charge of AT&T's pricing structure.
Question,
this is not fair. You should not have to pay for that, and any rational person can see that.
Good question.
I'm afraid we're out of time.
Anybody else do 800 numbers?
I'm sorry?
Any other companies do 800 numbers besides AT&T?
Yes. In fact, I can suggest cable and wireless is a very good alternative.
Giving out the same numbers as AT&T?
They don't give out the same numbers, but they give out numbers, and it only costs $10 a month, so
okay.
you really can't lose, you know?
What's the name of it?
Cable and wireless. They should be listed in the 800 directory.
Okay, cable and wireless. Thanks very much.
All right, thanks for calling. And that's... a fairly good deal compared to a rather raw deal. And it looks like we're out of time once again. But we'll be back again next week. Same time, same place. Stay tuned for the Personal Computer Show. This is Emmanuel Goldstein. Good night and stay awake.
I cut myself while shaving. Now I can't make a